This is Liz Siegert, one of the co-producers at HealthCetera. Family caregivers are exhausted, financially and emotionally drained. They need real, practical solutions. A new report says the next presidential administration must make this a bigger priority. Its authors want a national action plan to provide caregivers with some much-needed relief. Terry Fulmer is the former co-chair of the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine panel that wrote the report. She's now president of the John A. Hartford Foundation, a co-sponsor of this effort. I asked her what she's learned and why family caregiving issues are still on the policy back burner.
Well, I think that what we've learned is the incredible need that we thought was there, but we've really documented the extraordinary need for the 18-plus million family caregivers who are falling between the cracks. They are taking care of older people in their homes who have complex medical devices they need to manage, complicated medications, multiple visits that have to take care of. So what we knew that it's quite daunting to be a family caregiver, but we've really learned the nuances of just how daunting it is and begun to really have to think about how will we make sure that we address it. There are 8.5 million caregivers taking care of high-need dementia patients, for example. So there's a continuum of needs, and it's complicated, and we know family caregivers are saying to us, what do we do now?
The problem is, as you just mentioned, the family caregiver burden is growing exponentially, but the pool of available caregivers is shrinking. So what do we do?
That's a great question. And what we, so when you think about the shrinking pool, that has to do with the construction of families. It also has to do with the fact that people need to be employed, and it has to do with the fact that we may not be using technology as smart as we might. So there are recommendations in the report that talk about the role that technology might play in the future, and I think that that's something that's promising. We're just beginning to learn that. I also think that we need to figure out a way to compensate family caregivers so they can stay home instead of have that terrible stress of saying, do I go to my job or do I stay home and take care of my loved one? This we have to create a pathway forward.
A lot of employers don't have very family-friendly policies. That's becoming an issue in this election.
Yeah.
So what would you like to see done?
Well, what we know right now is that workplace benefits are extremely variable and limited. So just a point is that the Department of Labor estimates 40% of private sector workforce lacks any access to paid sick leave. So I'd like to see attention go to paid sick leave and really thinking about how to create paid time off, particularly for low-wage workers who are in the worst bind.
Many of those low-wage workers don't get paid if they don't show up.
Correct. We'd really like to see what we could do to give some relief there, to make sure that there's expanded FMLA, that there is the ability to sort of tackle job discrimination, because if you're a higher earner, you're more likely to get covered, and it's the people who are the lower earners that need the most support.
The report also calls for some policy modifications that include changes in Medicare and Medicaid and even changing the tone to patient and family-centered care, correct?
Yes.
How do we get something like that to happen given the current environment in Washington?
So you have a two-part question there. And the first is, how do we get something like that to happen? And we really need to think about a national strategy to transform policies that can identify family caregivers, assess their needs, reform policies, and think about how to use evidence-based programs to really support family caregivers. So that is a high-level response. The next thing is we have to galvanize the public. the disability community has done an exceptional job talking about what they need and how they want to get there. And if we can get family caregivers to learn from that other community, communities who have learned how to get their message to the Hill and really make sure that we have a fundamental change, it has got to happen. So the next thing you said was in the current political climate. And my response to that is, we really don't know which political climate we're moving into, and we have to be ready for both. So I think that we have to have a path A and a path, you know, a path X and a path Y that says to us, if we have a Democratic presidency, here are some things that we need to be thinking about. If we have a Republican presidency, here are some things we need to be thinking about.
Do you think that Congress is becoming more amenable because so many of them are in this situation now?
That's exactly it, Liz. You just hit the nail on the head. This is personal. This, everybody has a story of how they had to make a decision, a choice, a trade-off because they couldn't get the quality of care they needed. They couldn't get relief at their work site. They didn't feel that their family member was safe. And, of course, people in Congress are rich. By all standards globally, they have resources and ways to galvanize their resources. That we have to really be thinking about the rest of the country and what their problems are going to be. We know that number of days that people take in sick time because they had to care for a family caregiver is a drain on the economy. We've got to address it.
Have you seen a shift in the attitude among labor, among employers, too?
I have. I mean, and the stories I hear would reflect that people are waking up to this. The demographic shift with 10,000 people turning 65 every day really tends to catch people's attention. And we know that older people are now in a period of, with that aging, there's chronic diseases that have to be managed, and people who need to get to their appointments in order to try to stem the decline in their health to the degree possible, it's very personal. And so I think people are bringing that conversation to the workplace. Universities are doing a pretty good job, and I think we can learn from them. I think if we can get the Apples and the Googles of the world to lead the way, their workforce is younger, but they certainly have a lot of clout in the workforce when we think about what's possible. So I think we need some really excellent spokespersons to help us get this out.
We're seeing a shift from the issue used to be child care, and now it's becoming caring for parents and spouses. So
yes.
Perhaps society is shifting along with it.
They have no choice, and I'd like to think that this is something that they do with their hearts wide open. It's not that, you know, this is terrible, I have to take care of my older relative. It's like, this is great, I now have a way to take care of my older relative. I think we have to tackle ageism. That's the essence of what's going on. You know, what we would never tolerate in child care, we tolerate in elder care. That's got to stop. This is rampant ageism. We need to change the narrative, say we want the same excitement and enthusiasm for solving the problem for older adults who need care as we have for child care. And we could do a better job in child care too, by the way.
It took a huge movement in the 70s to really start implementing that. Do we need that same kind of social movement?
We absolutely do.
One of the things the report calls for are more supports and services. There's some services available in some communities if you happen to know about them or have the resources and the time to find them.
Yep.
How do we make accessing available community supports and services easier and more widespread?
Right. So we have trained people over the last decade to count on apps, to count on their cell phones. We know that that's a global phenomena, it's a national phenomena, and it's also across the age band phenomena. So we need to use our technologies to make it easier to be able to get ready information. I think the Alzheimer's Association does an outstanding job, not only for people who have Alzheimer's disease, but for people who begin to have cognitive changes, I think we need to use them as sort of a prototype for what's possible when you really want to get information out and supports. I think the Geriatric Education Center movement along that has now recently become the Geriatric Workforce Enhancement Program, funded by the Health Resources and Services Administration, is very keen on addressing this as well. Organizations like the Gerontological Society of America, the American Geriatric Society, are tackling this all the time. But we have to go beyond the usual suspects and have this be commonplace on Good Morning America as just a regular feature of what we consider. How are your children? How are the older people in your family? How are you taking care of them? How can I help you?
You and I both have friends and colleagues that are in this exact situation. And the complaint I always hear is, I can't find the resources, it's too hard to find it, and who has time? So what can be done today, tomorrow, while the policy changes are going on?
I think we really have to engage the for-profit corporate world. They are the ones who often lead in these things. Think about what Goldman Sachs did with Bright Horizons for child care. They can do that for elder care. But we need to engage with all sectors of the industry, not always go back to the same old all the time, and look for what are some of the venture capitalists thinking about? Where's the private equity to help trigger the same kind of sea change that happened when a Goldman Sachs decided that they wanted to really support women in the workplace and help them with childcare? They can do that with elder care.
What is J.A. Hartford doing about helping get this movement going?
So the first thing we did was help fund this report, which we think is really important because we were able to galvanize a group of multiple funders to bring them together to agree that this was such a serious problem that it would take not only our time but our resources, and we're proud of that. We're supporting the Gerontological Society as they begin a communications effort around this. The public has to know. We have to make sure. We've already held congressional, let me say, the National Academy of Medicine has already held congressional briefings with the Senate and the House to alert them to this. And we need to, we are very committed as a foundation to keeping a heavy pedal on getting the word out about the problems and potential solutions. We're going to be acting on some of the recommendations we're deciding about how to phase our work right now.
And as far as the average consumer, the average caregiver, should they be contacting their congressional representatives and getting on the phone and saying, we need help?
They absolutely should. And we need to also help them communicate with their employers. And they're afraid to. They're afraid they'll be fired. Mm-hmm. They're afraid they'll be passed over for a promotion. And we have to protect them. And we have to work with our government to say, what are the protections in place so that someone can say, I need help? Otherwise, we're going to see an increase in elder abuse and neglect, which is my area of research over the last 30 years. And we know that when you have inadequate care, you have elder abuse and neglect. And the report was made comments on that as well.
Caregivers are really put in almost an impossible decision-making situation.
It's Pythian, and I don't know how to spell that. That maybe you do. But, you know, it's like pushing a rock up the hill during the day and having it fall at night. It's just really hard. They're not, you know, when you think about providing care for older people, you're exhausted, you come to work, you underperform, you get tense, you might lose your temper. Any of us have been in that moment, and we have to be aware that this is going to be increasing. We have got to stay alert, otherwise we will reap what we sow.
One of the things in the report, too, is mental health counseling. That's a big part of this, too.
Respite for caregivers. There was some very nice work done by Jean Teresi and Doug Holmes and their colleagues years ago that talked about respite. You know, how do we, and others have done it as well. I just think of those two at the moment. But you think about what are the respite opportunities? Where are the safe spaces where you can have your older friend or family member get care while you get some sleep? Or maybe some exercise, or maybe take care of your own needs or your children's needs.
It's quite a bind.
Yeah, it really is. It's tragic. And, you know, we could double our number of caregivers if we used both genders. And here is the exact point I'm making. When I am a nurse, you know that. Mm-hmm. And when the last nursing shortage crisis hit, and people said to me, I was dean of NYU nursing, people said, Terry, what are we going to do? I said, I can double the number of nursing students tomorrow if you help me double the gender. And here, too, this is a feminist issue. Most family caregivers are women. I can double the number if you get men in the game with us.
The information I've seen on male caregivers, they tend to take on a much different role than the female caregivers do. Much less hands-on.
Right. They're more like they'll do transportation and they'll do errands. And maybe it's time to relook at how to bring them into all the different elements of care. I think we can change it. It's different than ageism, but it's an ism all the same, which is we have ingrained social norms, and we also know those can change when we demonstrate success with them. Men are excellent caregivers. I think about my stepfather who took care of his wife as she died with cancer. He gave her all her injections. He gave him all her baths. You know, he did that work. And we just need to highlight more of those people so that it can become more normative. So we have to reframe caregiving as a right, a responsibility. The greatest success story of the 20th century is longevity. You used to die at 40, now you die at 80. That's success. Our next success will be equal success in caregiving. And so those people did not ask to live this long. Now that they are, we have a moral responsibility to provide care and to do it in a humane and just way.
And, of course, all this costs money.
It does, but we make decisions about how we spend money. Do we need one more EpiPen that costs $800, or do we need to think about how to deploy that money differently? We make choices about how we spend money, and it's I would say two things. It's not always a zero-sum game. We have to decide how to be more creative with the money we spend. Maggie Kuhn has long since died, but as a Grey Panther, she started cohabitation, intergenerational housing. We need the next Maggie Kuhn to really take this on. She was incredible.
What can the listeners do now if they wanted to take some action?
So listeners can speak up. They should be writing letters to their congressmen and congresswomen. They should be asking about family leave at work, and we should give them strategies so that they don't feel at risk. They should be thinking about how other governmental agencies in our stratosphere, like think about the school system. How can we be using schools more effectively, long-term care facilities more effectively? In this moment where we're trying to close hospital beds, how could we be using our resources differently? So I think a listener should be asking for community services, looking for ways to get their voices heard. They might decide that they'll use their church group to coalesce together so that they feel like they're a unified voice. So whether it's their YMCA, their church, their synagogue, whatever, anything where they can convene, there's collectivity has power, and use their convening opportunities to get the word out that we want to solve the wonderful opportunity of better care for older people. I think all of us need to take these recommendations to heart and think about what each of us can do, and then collectively what we can do to make progress.
Many of us have been, are, or will be family caregivers. As the need for job flexibility, financial, and social support keep growing, will the next administration heed the call of this expert panel? Fulmer and millions of caregivers seeking solutions remain cautiously optimistic. For HealthCetera, I'm Liz Siegert.